Hello everyone and welcome to an Airline Pilot podcast from Flight Level 320. This is a podcast all about aviation and flight simulation hosted by myself, 320 Sim Pilot, a real world airline pilot, flight simmer and YouTuber. I'll be joined by other pilots and experienced flight simmers as we discuss all things aviation and flight simulation, answer questions from the community and chat about what it's like to take some of these incredible machines into the sky. This is from Flight Level 320. In today's episode, we'll welcome back Barney, who joined us in the previous and pilot episode, the very first episode of From Flight Level 320. Barney is an experienced airline captain, a very enthusiastic flight simmer, and a VATSIM controller who offers many years' experience across all these areas. So in this episode, I will be discussing some recent flight sim releases with Barney, as well as answering questions posted by the community. I've taken these questions from the 320 SimPilot Discord, which is available to join, and in future, we'll be finding other ways to get those questions to us if that's something that we would like to see more of in these podcasts. As I said, this is early days for the podcast, so I'm still trying out different formats, and there are plenty more people that I'd like to have on the show, of course, so we'll be going through different little styles and so on. But today, we're doing the questions from the audience, which has always been popular on the YouTube videos. Back when I started the YouTube channel, I used to do Q&A videos, which were very popular. Haven't done those for a while, but this seemed like quite a nice way to do something similar. So do please join the Discord if you'd like to post a question. You can go into the Discord podcast questions chat section and you can post them into there, and that's where I've taken these from for this episode. Also, before we get started, a huge thank you to everyone for the amazing response to episode one. We had lots of absolutely lovely comments, enthusiastic support, and some very heartwarming emails that really made our week. So thank you so much for those of you who did listen and those of you who sent us messages. It was really, really appreciated, and has absolutely given us lots of energy to come back for episode two, and hopefully many more into the future as we go through. I would just like to say very briefly that the audio is not quite as I would have liked for this episode. That will be sorted in the future. Now time for the traditional disclaimer. Nothing in this podcast is intended for any real world use. It is entirely here for your entertainment, and the opinions expressed are purely those of myself or Barney and do not reflect the opinion or views of our employers. Also, the podcast is available on Spotify. You can also get the RSS link and listen to it on your favorite podcast player, whatever that may be. But do please spread the word if you know someone who might be interested in a flight simulation from the perspective of real world pilots sort of podcast, then do please direct them our way, as of course that makes a big difference. And the only real way for this podcast to be promoted is for word of mouth. The more we manage that, of course, hopefully the more doors will open in terms of interesting interviews and variety of content that we can get you. So that would be very much appreciated. Of course, these podcasts will go onto YouTube slightly after they have been initially uploaded onto Spotify if you want to listen or watch them there. Right, let's get on with the discussion with Barney, where we take a look at some of the latest releases for flight simulation and then go into your questions about real-world aviation, flying airliners and flight simulation.
Okay, welcome back onto the podcast, Barney. Hope you're doing well.
Morning. Yeah, it's really well, thanks. Are you good?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm very good. It feels very early to me, but I know it's not so early for you. You're more used to this. But we're going to talk about a few of the new updates onto Microsoft Flight Simulator specifically today, just because there's been quite a few changes since we last spoke. And then we're also going to go through some questions from the people who've listened in, people who put questions onto the Discord. So yeah, that should be good fun.
Amazing.
Obviously we've done one episode so far and it seemed very well received. Anything thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was really, really, I was quite nervous about what people were gonna say, but yeah, and thank you to everyone that listened to it, and obviously hopefully it did all right, because we're back recording another one. But I really enjoyed it, and it's nice to have some feedback and stuff.
Yeah, we had lots and lots of nice comments, and I had some nice emails as well. So thank you to everyone who did comment or feedback or listen in. Really appreciate it. And even if you didn't, thanks for just listening. It's great to know people are enjoying it. And that's why we're doing it, really. So yeah, it's good. It was good fun. So today, slightly different format. Last time was a bit more of an interview. This time, more of a sort of a chat. And like I say, I had these questions to answer from people with some quite good ones in there. So I've taken a selection for today's podcast. But first of all, in Microsoft Flight Simulator land over the last couple of weeks, they've had the big New Zealand update. Have you installed that? Have you had a go with that?
I have, yeah, and as you sort of know, I lived in New Zealand for a while, so
Yeah.
it's been really cool flying around where I used to fly.
How does it compare?
Do you know, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Was it already pretty good before the update? I suppose is
I
what
would
I'm
say so.
wondering.
Yeah, I'd say like when I went there before, I was like, "Oh, this is quite incredible." But
Yeah.
it's I'd say it's really, some of the built airports like Mount Cook and Milford Sound. Have you been there yet?
Oh, let me just have a look. What was the code for that one?
I think it's NZMF, I think.
We missed that one. Yeah, I did
It's
a
my
group
favorite
flight.
airport.
Oh, that's what I should ask you. Yeah, I did a group flight and we went around a few, but NZMF was actually, it was the possible option at the end, but we'd gone on too long. So we stopped at Quinton Lodge. I don't know
Oh
if you
yeah,
know.
I know. I think yeah.
Have you ever flown
Not
near it? I can't imagine you have.
in
It
real life, no,
no.
because I was mainly focused on the North Island, but I would love to have gone down there. It's just absolutely amazing place.
Well, Quinton Lodge is utterly terrifying, obviously. I really don't know how people get in and out of there. We went in the Caribou and yeah, trying to fly that approach. I mean, I wasn't really using any charts, so I'm sure there is an easier way to do it than what we did. But yeah, okay, interesting. So some of those new airports they've added in, you have visited and that you think they do a good
Yeah,
job of.
definitely. And do try and visit Milford Sound, because it's a really cool
Okay.
approach going onto the Westley runway, because
Right.
you kind of have to do some sort of weird circling to go. You go if you've flown out towards the ocean, you sort of come back, go overhead the field, do a little U-ey in the valley, a bit like Innsbruck if you've ever been to Innsbruck.
Yeah.
It's really cool, really cool place.
Very good. Okay, for that I've saved that for next time. Yeah, okay, that's good. It was really spectacular, and I'm really impressed that they're still giving us this free content. I mean, how long has it been? Isn't it coming up in 3 years now? It launched
Yeah,
2020.
it's unbelievable. It's like it's almost like you'd think, I don't want them to do this, but it's almost like you'd think it would be subscription based with the amount of
Don't
effort they're.
say it. Don't
Yeah, I know I
say
shouldn't have said that, but the
it.
amount of effort they're putting into it's just unbelievable. So impressive.
It is good, yeah. It is nice. I'm still waiting for a native, fully fledged replay function like we've had in every other simulator. But aside from
What do
that,
you mean? Like the so you can.
so you can
The thing is.
replay the landing or something.
Have other simulators actually done it well though? Because I know, was it P3D? Or I remember using it in FSX. It would never sort of replay all the animations. It was kind of just the physical movements of it.
In FSX as well. I thought the FSX one did do the animations.
Maybe it did. Maybe it was just. I know that the
Maybe it was just
latest
P3D.
P3D one struggled to do that.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. But the I'll tell you now then, X-Plane does it perfectly. There's very
Does it?
few. Yeah, there's only some of the X-Plane bugs are so tiny, and it's quite interesting. You see the developer notes talking about the replay function in X-Plane, and they'll be like, "Oh, unfortunately, because of the functionality of the replay, the main wheel bogies don't correctly align with the runway during the replay." And it's like the smallest little details like that, but the flaps, the lights, the engine startups—you can do the whole thing in replay mode. It's quite amazing. So
Wow.
I parked up Concorde and shut it down and then rewound it. Ah, no, maybe Concorde didn't work in X-Plane 12. Having said that, but something like the TOLIS, yeah, you
It
can
did,
shut it
yeah.
down and then rewind it, and it will do it all in reverse. It's quite amazing. Yeah,
Did you?
it's good.
Isn't there a replay function now on Microsoft Flight Simulator?
So I use Flight Recorder, which is an external program. But the funny thing about it is, I suspect I care more about the replay than most people. Sounds like I care more about it than you because I make videos with it, and obviously in the streams. So I suspect I'm a little more keen for that feature than I would otherwise be, because I get a landing and I then want an outside shot of it, and in every video I do, really. So I use this other software, and sometimes I forget to start it and so on stream, which is always a bit frustrating. And it won't handle configuration changes as well as the default one. But I have been advised about a new one, Sky Dolly, that I should try. So I'm going to try that and see if it
All right.
handles that better. Anyway, yeah. And the other thing about New Zealand is I did use some of the flight beam scenery. Have you used that?
Oh, wow. Flight beam is just incredible.
It is amazing. And I've never really, there's lots of great scenery for Flight Simulator, and I've talked about a few of them, and I like a lot of them. But the flight beam stuff is really another level, as far as I can tell. I'm blown away by it. So if anyone's wondering, if you go to if you well have a look on YouTube at the flight beam scenery for they're particularly New Zealand focused, aren't they, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, they do a lot of places. Like for P3D, they did all over the world.
Oh, right, okay.
I had a lot of their scenery, and it is just incredible. It was kind of like the highest standard, I would say.
Yeah, we saw Wellington and Auckland. So if you go onto my channel and find my 146 in New Zealand stream, yeah, we do Wellington and Auckland, and it's unbelievably good. I mean, they really capture the sort of, you know, because most runways aren't perfect and they're different and they have patches or different colors halfway down the runway and all of that. And they capture every sort of little bit of detail and change in the asphalt, yeah, and everything. And the taxiways are the same. And yeah, really remarkable.
Yeah, they are absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
They were quite big in the P3D world. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, well, they hopefully they'll do some more in Microsoft Flight Simulator, because yeah, absolutely, very impressed. Yeah. So the other big releases in Flight Simulator land over the last couple of weeks, we've had both the Antonov 225 from Anybuilds and Microsoft, and then the DHC4 Caribou from Asobo. So have you tried either of those yet, Barney?
I haven't, but I was watching a very big YouTuber's video on it, actually. the stream, sorry, I should say. But no, I haven't tried it yet, but I really like the idea of the Caribou. The 225, I've read mixed reviews, but you tell me, is it good?
Oh, what have you heard?
Well, I just heard that I've heard there's it's not up to what you would class like the A310 to be, who I think the same developers built it, maybe.
Yeah, any did the A310. It's not, no, it's not at the same level. they're a bit,
I don't think you can expect it to be like that. Like, absolutely,
no,
obviously, but...
because it's priced, I think it's, what's it priced at? It's isn't it under, I think it's under £15, isn't it? Or £16, something like
that. Is it? Oh, right. I didn't
know. It might be down at £12, I think. And then I think the Caribou is a bit more expensive because that's a little bit more detail. Yeah, it's priced accordingly. I'm for the price, I think it's excellent value, actually. It's the visual model is spot on. Really, really nice detail. You can see you know, all of Microsoft's best sort of lighting and so on put into it. And they haven't sort of, it's not, it doesn't look rushed, you know, it looks like a really finished visual model.
And okay,
we haven't
good.
Had one of those in any flight sim, as far as I'm aware, like a really good, and it is up to payware standard. There's no doubt about it. It's not like a charged freeware. It's systems wise, you know, the plane had what, 6 people flying it or whatever.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I've got to simplify it. Yeah.
If they try to do it like the Concorde or something, it's going to be so hard, and so few people would really get to enjoy it, especially as obviously the text in the cockpit is in Cyrillic. It's not in English. They do have an option to change some of it to English, but all that changes is like some of the warning panels and a few words here and there. So I haven't even attempted a startup myself. I think there is a way to do it, but it's something like 74 items long just for the pre-safety inspection, and I don't know where most of those buttons are.
And they all work, do they? Is are they all working?
A lot of it works. Things like fuel pumps and hydraulic pumps seem to work, but then lots of them don't. But then it's hard to know which switches are and aren't important, because I just don't know the aircraft. So, you know, if you got an Airbus and it didn't feature a working flight cockpit recorder panel, you wouldn't really care in terms of simming. So you know, how much of that flight deck they needed to add, I don't know myself, just because I don't know the aircraft. But once you get it up and running, it sounds great. It maneuvers on the ground like a big heavy monster like it is. And when you get it in the air, the autopilot features are really challenging and different. And I like that quite a lot. And it's been taking me a while. So they have modeled the autopilot properly. It's not like they've just stuck in a Garmin unit. You know, it does have a little GPS stuck in, but you can tune the VOR. You can make it fly VOR course, all using its strange format. So I'm going to do a stream with it soon. And hopefully get through it, because
that's fantastic.
It's quite a headache, but it's quite special and quite satisfying to get it to work. I do like it. And we've just not seen replicated. And it's a very pretty aeroplane. It's a surprisingly pretty aeroplane. It looks
it is
more right than you'd expect, doesn't it?
Have you the thing? Have you taken it on like any of the real routes it did yet?
No, I've not managed that, no. I will. I'm going to take it for a proper flight soon on a stream. But yeah, interesting what you heard. So no, it's I can vouch for it as being about to pull the microphone off the desk.
Yeah. Maybe I'll go and purchase it then.
It seems like your sort of thing.
Okay, I'll give it. Have you tried the PAC 750 X-STOL yet?
No. No, not tried that.
They're so cool. That's a classic New Zealand aircraft.
Okay. All right. That's another one.
Do you know anything about it?
No.
So have a look at it on Google. It's a very strange looking plane. It's got a very stubby sort of wing, a bit like the Corsair.
What's it called?
Style wing. It's got a PT6 engine in the turbine engine in the front of it. And it's basically
What's it called again?
The PAC 750 X-STOL.
PAC 750 X-STOL. Okay.
They were built and made in New Zealand for agriculture and like mountain strips.
Okay.
And they're considering the size of them, they are absolutely incredible. Watching them take off and land, and I remember being in New Zealand going to like an air show, and they had one of these things, and it could do a steep approach, and then land within like maybe like 30 meters, 40 meters, it just stop. And it was just incredible.
So there is the PAC P750X STOL. Wow. First flight 2001. Now, it's funny, the picture they've got on Wikipedia does not look like a STOL aircraft at all. It's not, for a start, it's a low wing with a slight sort of gull. It looks a little bit like a big PC or a PC-12 sort of shape with a sort of PA-28 tail. I'm really surprised that's such a... That's such a thing. How interesting.
If you look at the thickness of the wing, it's an absolute beast.
Wow. Yeah, so it does have massive wings, isn't it?
And it's on the flight sim, they've modelled it really well. And it's got like even got the agriculture, so you can go like crop spraying and stuff like that in it.
Right. Very nice. And that's, who makes that?
I don't know. But
Orbex,
it's really good.
It looks like.
Is it actually Orbex that made it, or do they just sell it?
I don't know, actually. It looks like it's Orbex. $26 Australian. I think it is. I think it is Orbex. Yeah. They do their own, some of their own aircraft, don't they? And there's the agriculture sort of panel. Yeah. Oh, that's very cool.
That's quite fun to fly around, especially if you're doing a bit around New Zealand. It's absolutely amazing fun just to buzz in and out of places. Try your short field landings, and it's got like a skydiving fit on it and stuff as well.
Nice. Well, that brings us perfectly onto then the DHC4 release, the De Havilland Canada Caribou, which you haven't tried, I don't think, yet.
No.
Now that is a really interesting one. I haven't understood exactly where Asobo got the idea to make that into. It's one of their local legends series, I think. So. It's the Antonov, of course, is famous for many reasons, including unfortunately the fact that it's recently been destroyed. But if you buy that, the money, they say on the marketplace at the moment, 100% of the proceeds go to Antonov Corporation for rebuilding it, which is quite interesting. That's quite a good idea, really. The Caribou is a plane that I was not familiar with at all, but I did fly. Yeah. I like it because I flew an aircraft, the DHC-8. The -8, which was also to happen in Canada, obviously now Bombardier, but it's a high wing STOL aircraft as well, designed mainly used by the military, but it has huge great tires, huge great flaps. You've never seen anything like it. Double slotted trailer flaps that come down to sort of 90 degrees, absolutely ridiculous. And it's
that's
got an
bringing back memories of ATPL's double slotted Fowler.
Yeah,
flaps.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you see them. It's remarkable. And
really,
it has an angle of attack indicator. So as you're flying a steep approach, in front of you there's a fast slow needle for the.
Right.
I believe it's based on angle of attack for the steep approach, which you don't see very often in commercial aircraft. So it doesn't have any sense of airspeed on it. It's just a scale fast and slow, like you sort of get in...
That's the way like fighter jets fly.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to bring up the Tomcat now because I always any opportunity. So the F-14 Tomcat,
and the Tomcat,
other jets like that. They work on. You know, we know the military loves their angle of attack, and quite interesting to see that. But that stops on a dime. We used it in New Zealand, and you could you could land that in, and it's great fun. But that you'd like that aircraft because. That seems to show off some of the best sort of lighting and texturing and modeling that I've seen in Microsoft Flight Simulator. On the exterior model, the you can see the panels like wrinkling and stuff like that. It's ridiculous. It looks absolutely beautiful. It's really very
good.
And
is it on the marketplace or is it?
Yeah, both of these are on the marketplace. Yeah.
Wow.
two very strong releases, definitely, and straight onto the marketplace, no less as well. So, yeah. Anyway, those are the two new things.
Wow, that's cool.
So, shall we talk about some questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, so Barney has now already purchased both of those add-ons that we've been discussing earlier at the end of the Caribou, but yeah, easily influenced.
Are you on commission?
Yeah.
No, you sold it to me. I've got to try them.
No, they're great. Very, very, just interesting.
Yeah.
So in terms of questions now, we'll move on to the questions from the community. The first one, so I put it up on the Discord a while back, and I said I'm hopefully doing a podcast, so if anyone has any questions they'd like to ask, because this is obviously on the stream what I get a lot of, and it can be quite hard to answer them live, and also it's just my opinion, and it's good to get other people's opinions on it as well, and also just have time to chat about it without trying to also handle an approach into Queenstown or whatever. So from George Lumpkin is, what's the biggest challenges to work-life balance and how do you manage them being an airline pilot? So I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that to start off with.
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
I think my biggest challenge is I struggle to say no to doing things. And I think sometimes when you've landed early or you're quite tired, sometimes you have to sort of say, oh, I might not do today because I'm absolutely shattered. When you really, really want to be like, yeah, I'll come over. I'll come and do this. Let's go do that. So I think that's quite a struggle sometimes.
So how about you? You're talking about in your personal life, sort of after some of the shift work we do. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good one. And I was going to say the same thing. It's the shifts. So it's being able to learn how you can handle getting up at 3:30 in the morning and working for the next sort of, or being at work for the next 12 hours if you need to be, and being you can't just manage, you have to actually be professional and as capable as you would be if you were doing it at 11 o'clock in the morning, and managing that whilst also managing your social life around it can be limiting. So if you have friends who don't work shifts and do 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, it can be really hard to arrange to see them. Because obviously we do have to work weekends. That's people want to go on holiday on the weekends and go traveling on the weekends. So that's a big part of our life. So I'd agree with that. Yeah. It's the shift work and how do you manage them, I suppose, would be about, as you say, being able to say no when you don't think it's sensible or you can't do it, or when you need to get an early night, and also planning ahead, well ahead, booking in meetups a month in advance. it's just how it is, especially if I think struggle with someone who's like, say, 9 to 5 most of the time.
Exactly. I do think people maybe think it's harder than it is. Mm-hmm. I think we're quite fortunate that we do have some control over our life and what we do. So I suppose it is a challenge sometimes, but it's worth it personally.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. It's just the nature of the job. And I think I benefit from the lack of routine. I think it helps me to enjoy it a bit more, the variety. I don't mind the sort of the random lengths of week or random days off. It sort of suits me, but that's probably just because it's what I'm used to and conditioned for now after so many years of only doing that. The idea of,
it's quite nice as well. Like, I like being off in the week because the town's not as busy.
It's quieter. Yeah,
yeah, it's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Great. moving on then. The next one is from Nib 1600. They ask, on the A320, one system or piece of equipment that you could change, what would it be? What would you like to see changed about it? So it doesn't have to be because you don't like it, just could be something that you personally want or would like to have. I've got an idea.
Me?
Yeah, what do you think? Or I can go first if you like.
You go first, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I would like to see the thrust levers move. I think that would... I don't think there's anything wrong with them staying still. Because essentially that's sort of the way it's designed. But I do think on an approach, if they were moving and I could nudge them as I wanted to, that would be a nice feature to have. Now, I've never flown an aircraft that does that, but I hear it's very popular with Boeing pilots who get to use that feature. That's not to say the Autotrust isn't doing a good job, and with Ground Speed Mini, which is a feature that the Airbus keeps its ground speed even into windy conditions, I think it's fine. But now that the Neos have reduced ground speed, I think I would like to be able to nudge up the power if I got a sense, because we're riding the aircraft in a certain way, especially when the autopilot and autothrust are still in. So we're feeling the effects of the air on the aircraft, and you get used to what those rhythms tend to mean. Not always, but you get a strong idea, and you can predict a sudden loss of speed coming quite easily. I find anyway. So that's something I would like.
Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That would be very cool, actually, to be able to have something like that.
Yeah.
So mine wasn't as intellectual.
You're gonna say
as that.
A second cup holder.
Second. No, I was gonna say, do you know on the 350 and the 380 they got the taxi map?
Oh yes, yeah.
I think having a taxi map would be really useful. I do know you can get it, but a lot of airlines don't.
No.
So I would love a taxi map on the ND, and also a what was the other one? I think taxi map.
Taxi map, yeah, that would be nice. And yeah, you're right. You can. I have seen it. It is available on some Airbuses or some of the later ones. But quite a fancy feature for short haul style aircraft. But you can. Also, I mean, the amount of fit that there have been on the Airbus. You know, there was a HUD once, like an F-14 style HUD. No, it wasn't F-14, actually. It was like a...
really?
A Typhoon. Something like a Typhoon. Like one of those square flip-up ones. Yeah, yeah. It has existed. Hard to believe. There's not much footage of it out there, but it did exist. So, yeah.
That's cool.
I know that Alitalia had one of those at one point, but I don't know how useful that would be in the Airbus though, because of course it's not really designed around it like the Dreamliner or something like that. But there we go. So there's a couple of pieces. Yeah, you could also say, why doesn't the tray table have a little indent for the cup on it? You know, things like that. Although that's certainly because it's a no spill zone now. You're definitely not supposed to have drinks on it. But there we go.
No spill zone. Yeah.
So once again, proving Barney's flight sim credentials, he is now already flying the Antonov 225 while we carry on with this podcast. But it sounds like a bit of a struggle. He's already asked me, why is he doing 450 knots around the circuit? So he obviously hasn't read the
I haven't read the POH yet, no. Yeah. 521 kilometers an hour, there we go.
How are you finding it?
It's cool, really cool, yeah.
It's something else. I tell you,
it's
what,
fun, isn't it?
It looks great in drone camera. The spot sort of circle camera, whatever you want to call it, is still a frustration of mine in Microsoft Flight Simulator because it sits so low. I think the idea, someone pointed this out on stream, it's that when you're in the spot view, you can still see over the aircraft, so you can land it. But I want it like FSX days, an X-plane, and I want it bang in the middle. You know, I want to look at the airplane, not anything around it when I'm in the spot
view.
That's
a good point, yeah.
And it works really badly for the Antonov because it's so huge that the camera is so wide angle to keep it in frame at the bottom there. You miss out on its sort of presence, I think. But the drone does fix that. The drone is very good. Right. Next question. Johnny Carlson asks, if you had, now I'm paraphrasing these questions slightly, but if you had a limit of Cat 2, but the weather was still just about Cat 1, but it was sort of getting close to the Cat 2 limit, would you choose Cat 2 just to be safe? And the second part of that question is, if you were flying a low-vis approach and you wanted to swap to a manual landing, if the weather's better than expected, can you do that? Now, it's quite a technical question, and I'm not going to go into too much detail on the specific numbers or anything like that. For those of you who don't know, what Johnny's talking about there, Cat 2 and Cat 1 is different categories of landing. So they're all using the instrument landing system, which is our sort of most precise way to land the aircraft. And with that system, the Airbus can actually land itself quite capably in quite a lot of conditions. But what can happen is there's different categories. So category one is sort of the normal sort of day. And if you go below that, that's when the visibility gets worse, you end up in Cat 2. And when it gets really bad, you end up in what's called Cat 3. And there's different versions within that. So what Johnny's asking is, would you set up and fly a more restrictive approach like a Cat 2 when the weather was just on the edge of a Cat 1? And the reason you wouldn't just do that all the time is because, well, that's something we can talk about really, but there's issues with the airport being set up for it, the aircraft being set up for it, how briefed you are, and there's different different processes that we have to go through when we're going to go below category one, which is sort of, like I say, the standard. So category two would be something that would be available, but it might not be available from the airport. And the reason is, as you fly down the approach, for it to go into category two and category three, the airfield needs to go into its low visibility procedures. So to do that, they'll actually clear sort of heavy vehicles away from the ILS antennas and protect wider areas around the runway. They'll use different holding points for aircraft waiting to take off. They'll use different separation. So airfields will be reluctant to do that if the weather is still good enough for Cat 1. So yes, it would be nice to go to Cat 2 option if the weather was on the limit, but you may not have that choice initially until you go around or insist on it from air traffic control. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that, Barney.
No, I completely agree. I think the thing is, you'd be surprised how late the airports will leave it before going into low vis. There's nothing unsafe about it. It's just they don't need to. And as soon as they go to low vis, as you sort of suggested, they'll have to start increasing the spacing, which then in busy airports can bring in massive slot delays.
And it's immediately, just not, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
It's just not something they'll want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So they will avoid it until the weather requires it. So that's usually not an option we have. But if you're in a nice quiet airport and it's available, then yeah, sure. Why wouldn't you? If it's pushing on to the limit. And that does occasionally happen, you get that option. In terms of, would you switch to a manual landing if the weather was better than expected? What are your thoughts on that, Barney?
The thing is, the weather doesn't change that quickly. It can do, but I don't. It's not going to go from autoland to manual landing.
Yeah,
rapidly.
It's unlikely, isn't it?
Yeah, I've done. I did an approach and landing a few months ago, where it was overcast at 200 feet, so right on our on the Cat 1 limit, so literally right on the last limit you can get to manually land it. And they still weren't in low visibility procedures, but it was very weird being in cloud, getting the 100 above call, and then literally minimums continue out of control. And it's amazing how you can what you can do without having to go into low vis and autolands and stuff like that.
Yeah, we forget that what a true Cat 1 approach looks like, because it's actually quite it's quite restrictive, and yet it's a manual landing sort of normal thing.
It's pretty cool though, because you do kind of, you really got to keep on your toes, because you sat there thinking, right, are we going to go around? What are we going to do if we go around? What's the fuel situation, blah blah blah.
And that's what's going to bring me on to my point, which is if you want to swap to a manual landing, you'll have briefed very carefully for the low visibility procedure and approach. So including who's doing what at what time and who needs to read out what. So to suddenly abandon that without a plan and suddenly say, well, I'm just going to take over and land it now. Now you might have to do that if the aircraft downgrades and you're visual and you have that option, but it's not necessarily the best course of action. And most pilots would probably just carry on to practice or keep familiar with the auto land, and B, it allows you to check that the aircraft is doing it right, because the aircraft will actually get signed off, so they need to do, well, it's good for them to be seen in the tech log, it'll be written down. Usually a lot of airlines do this, they monitor how well they're doing their auto lands, because of course if it does a bad one and you have to intervene, then it needs to be noted, and other pilots will then know not to try and auto land that aircraft until it's fixed. So probably in answer, Johnny, to that question, is that probably people would carry on with the auto land. But if, like you've set up and you get there and it's cav okay, clear skies, it's all the fog's burnt off and disappeared and it's just visual, you might just you might just rebrief for a normal landing. Especially if, as we discussed, let's say the airfields come out of their low visibility procedures as a result and they're not protecting the airfield, it might be better to do it manually. That sort of thing could happen.
Yeah, very good question, though.
It is a good question, isn't it? And there's another point, which is, of course, whether you might get sudden visual and you can lose it again in the space of a couple of seconds. I've seen that before, where the aircraft, especially if you're following a larger aircraft, it blows a hole in the fog, and then you can see the runway lights. And you might think, oh, excellent. And whilst they're landing, you take out the autopilot, and then it just fogs completely over again. So these are all possibilities.
It is incredible how quickly it can an airfield can fog out.
Absolutely.
And you've got to be a lot of quite minor technical issues with the aircraft that can cause significant downgrades to the Autoland system. So you've always got to be on your toes a bit.
Yeah, we sort of want to be ready for the next level up of weather, as it were, because we're always in the back of our mind thinking, well, what if this fails? Like if you're sitting in a low visibility airport and you haven't got the fuel to divert to, well, you basically do need to have the fuel to divert to the an airport with better weather, not because you won't get into where you are necessarily, but because if something fails on your aircraft and you can no longer do these low visibility approaches to the same level, it's no good diverting to another airport that does the same level of weather. You need to be able to have a backup, which is all something we plan for in the planning stages before we even set off. But yeah,
what is it, that famous SAS quote, plan for the worst, hope for the best?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it's the thing in the flying, isn't it? We always brief the engine failure. We always brief this, but we hope it never happens.
Exactly. Yeah. We know we can deal with it.
Exactly.
Next question from Gail is, what's your earliest or strongest formative aviation memory? And they actually said, and why is it the Air Tapestry livery Air 2000 757? So that's clearly my one. Anyone who's seen the channel knows
exactly,
I have a particular fondness for that aircraft. But how about you, Barney?
I remember going on holiday and walking. We were obviously on a busing stance because we were walking across the apron. And do you remember all the BA World Tales?
Yeah.
I remember seeing them. That must have been back in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that very clearly. That was cool.
Yeah, and exciting, isn't it?
Yeah,
for me, it is Air, you know, Air Tapestry, Air 2000 Tapestry livery is a big one because that was what we used to go on holiday on. And it would be something similar, actually. I remember a couple of things. Once we were going on holiday and we were allowed into the flight deck at night when everyone else was sort of asleep on the plane, and I was allowed to sit in the captain's seat, which is just obviously not even close to possible now. But I remember doing that whilst we were flying, and that was in a jumbo jet over the Atlantic, and that was quite amazing. And I've always remembered the sheepskin, fake sheepskin sort of seat. I don't know if it's real or not, actually. I remember sitting in it, and I was tiny, and it's stuck in my head, and the sort of orange glow of all the lights around me. Don't remember much else about that, but I remember those two things. And
that's so cool, isn't it?
That's got to be my earliest memory. I was tiny. And then after that, the reason I'm so fond of the Air 2000 livery is I remember driving in to go on holiday, and I used to get really excited as we got near to the airport. You know, you'd start seeing the signs of the little airplane on, and you know that's where you're going, and you're going to go on an airplane. That's so exciting. And then you'd get near the airport, and all of a sudden you'd see your first tail sticking up over the terminal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Going to, that was to Gatwick, so you could see them before you could see anything else. You could just see these tails, and I'd see the Air 2000 one, and it was just unbelievably exciting by that point. I was just giddy. Couldn't wait. Good question.
That's awesome.
Last one from Maxim is, what are the pet peeves of flying commercially? I can give you my one, if you like, or one of my pet peeves to start with.
Yeah.
So for me, it's if the other pilot touches my MCDU or FMS. it elicits an immediate response from me, almost just like shock that anyone would even think of doing it.
Leaning over to your side.
I can't.
How dare they?
I know. It's so silly. And of course, it's not a real issue, but it's sort of, I think it's because they usually do it when it's just quicker for them to just check something on the other MCDU. So let's say you're comparing the two flight plans with different routes or something like that, and you want to see both of them at the same time. But if they just lean across and without asking and select it on my MCDU, it's something else.
Right, that's a really good question. Pet peeves. My pet peeve is the taxi and taxi lights, right?
Yep.
I've got this really big thing about the taxi lights and the way I use the lights. So in my view, this is me as a proper av geek, my view, if you have the taxi and turn off lights on, it indicates you're moving, right? Or you've not completed your taxi.
Yeah.
The only time I'll turn it off is when I've reached my clearance limit. So say they say hold short of alpha. If I get to hold short of alpha and turn them off, it means I've stopped.
Right.
Whereas, or if I'm blinding someone, if someone's coming the other way and I want to blind them, don't want to blind them. So I'll leave the turn off lights on, but the taxi lights off. Or if I want to give way to someone, I'll turn them off to indicate that I'm giving way. So those, but what annoys me the most is when people just turn them on and leave them on the whole time. And I'm like, and they'll be sat there at the holding point at night, shining their taxi light across the runway. I'm like, turn it off. that's my big pet peeve.
I'm going to give you an alternative opinion on that then.
Go for it.
So where is it? Well, my question is, does everyone know those rules, you see? Because it sounds like... Exactly. I think it's a little bit like flashing your lights, driving your car to give someone in a gap or something, where it's probably what it means, but it's not guaranteed. I believe in America, it might be a more formalized rule.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. So in the last podcast, Barney sent me a video of an amazing approach down a valley. And I'm now going to return the favor, and you're going to get the joy of listening to Barney watching a video that I'm going to send him. So this one, you probably have seen it, but I just want to get your reaction to it. I've just sent it to you. For those of you listening, this is a Skiathos landing. So Skiathos is a bit like St. Martin in the Caribbean. It's famous for having an approach that goes right over a beach just before landing. And this video is one of the lowest I've seen. There's been a couple, but yeah, have you got that one, Bunny? I'll watch it at the same time. So what it is, it's an A321.
Ooh, that's
Neo.
Low, isn't it? Wow. Perfect.
That's the reaction.
Oh, God.
I'll put a link to that in the podcast if you want to watch it at home. But yeah, it's a beautiful A321 Neo coming into Skiathos. One of the largest sort of aircraft to go in there, really, placing the 757s it used to. But the height over that beach and that threshold, I don't know what it is, but it is not 50 feet.
You can see the sink.
Can you? You think you actually...
Yeah, I think I can sort of see the last sort of the sink and then pitch up slightly.
Interesting.
That's what I think. Anyway, I think the thing with the Neo engines is they're quite... They're not as responsive as some of the class the CEO engines sometimes.
Right.
They're great, but they're just sometimes I find that they can
be
slower to respond.
Bigger fan on the
changes.
Front. Yeah. And I would agree, which sort of was what brought me to my point about the thrust levers earlier on, that I'd like a bit of ability to sort of just nudge them in the direction I want them at times. But it is amazingly low, that one, isn't it? I mean, because in theory, we cross the threshold at 50 feet. As far as I'm aware, Skiathos doesn't have different procedures. Sorry, that's the first officer acting in the background. As far as I'm aware, Skiathos doesn't have different procedures for that, although it might, and certain airlines might have differences that they like to... that they like to follow. But that's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. But
they touched down. I mean, we're supposed to touch down within the touchdown zone. They touched down... on the numbers, well, very close to the numbers. I mean, they're barely on the piano markets. It's quite amazing. So, yeah, that's quite a fun video.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Have you seen the later footage in the video as well, where the wide angle camera?
No.
Oh, that's unreal. Yeah. Watch it to like 1 minute 50. And then the dust that comes up from it. I would not be happy standing underneath it.
Wow.
Right. Well, there we go. So yeah, the link to that will be... Well, look at the end. Have you seen the next one?
No.
Throw back to 2013. There's an Air Italy 737 around the 2 minute mark.
Oh, yeah.
What a place. Now, we go to Skiathos on the channel quite regularly. I've used it for a lot of videos and streams, and I really like it. But I don't think it's that short. It's not like it's 800 meters. There we go. So link will be in the description to the podcast on Spotify or on YouTube or wherever you're listening to this. Great. Well, that's it then. So for another edition of the From Flight Level 320 podcast, thank you very much for joining us again, Barney. I hope you've enjoyed it again.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it was really good fun.
Great.
Always up for it.
Good. Oh, well, we'll have you back on soon, no doubt. And thank you so much for taking the time to come and answer the questions. Lots more questions to come in the future as well. So we can, I've only got through, like I say, we've only done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 questions today. So excellent. Right. Well, I'll leave you to your day. And thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Thanks, dude. I'll speak later.
Bye.
So that's all for today's episode of From Flight Level 320. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you so, so much for listening, and thank you again for those kind words from the previous episode. There'll be more episodes coming soon. I'm hoping to release on about a once every 2 weeks sort of schedule, and I've got plenty more questions of yours to answer. Of course, we barely even scratched the surface of those. We've also got more people I'd love to introduce you to, experienced pilots and flight simmers who I think would have great fun on the podcast. And like I said, if you can get the word out about the podcast to people who you think may enjoy it, that would really make a big difference, as that is the best way we can promote the podcast and hopefully use that to get a few more people on and have some interesting discussions for you all. That's it then. Do please keep safe and well. We'll see you again in another video, podcast or live stream. Don't forget, of course, YouTube 320 Sim Pilot is my channel where you can see videos and streams. And of course, this podcast will go slightly later. So thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye bye.